Hello and welcome to Writing About Dragons and Shit. Podcasters, two authors and a writer get together and talk about the way they tell stories. I'm one of your hosts, Trevor Bettis, writer of Idle Champions of the Forgotten Realms and host of Too Many Podcasts. See, I'm already stumbling over my words. This is why Aaron is reading the questions tonight. And with me each week are two amazing people who are...
I'm Aaron M. Evans. I write fantasy novels. I'm best known for Empire of Exiles and the Brimstone Angel saga.
Yeah. It is I, B. Dave Walters. I say words about things. You can find me wherever fine streaming content can be located. I write screenplays, novels, comic books, anything you can do with the written word is a thing I do.
Yeah. Well, hello, listeners. We've been off for a little bit. August was a lot busier than we thought it was going to be. So here we are.
Accursed con season.
Accursed con season.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that does sound like a curse you could throw at someone. Yeah, accursed con season to you.
And I said good day.
And so we thought we'd come back with a couple episodes of listener questions. This is going to be one of at least two. We might do another one after it. So we're gonna hop into those. Aaron, I sent the questions to, because as you can already hear in the intro, I'm stumbling over my words today.
I'm the reader now.
You're the, sure. I'm the
look
reader
at your face.
Now.
Look at your face.
So, you want to just hop into some questions?
Yeah, except I have to ask you something. Huh. This first question mentions having an attachment.
I know it does.
I would like to make sure you're just ready with that.
I will be.
All right, here we go. Yeah. Tangenteers! First, thank you for making this podcast. I had stopped writing my novel for a while and then started writing again after discovering the show. Something about listening to you guys talk about writing in such practical terms allowed me to figure out my outline and get cracking. I have two things here for you. One is a question, and the other is a piece of fan art / design.
What?
The art is attached to this email message, and the question is this. And Trevor, okay. We better see
okay.
This art.
I'm gonna send you the art right now. It is in okay. The chat. They sent us two variants of the abbreviation of our show, mixed with the Dungeons and Dragons ampersand.
I
genuinely love this because it combines all my things. We can't legally use this.
I was about to say, we'll get sued into dust if we did that. But dear listener, dear writer, you can post that and tag us in it, and we can be like, oh my god, that's so cool.
Oh my god, look at that. Yeah.
I love this.
I do genuinely love this. This is so good.
Yeah, no, that is super awesome.
Thank you for it. Okay, here's the question. I have decided to have my hero, who is a loner and a burnt out wizard, paired with another younger and more academic wizard. The dynamic plays well into the overall plot and is tied to the hero's character arc. What advice can you give as I continue to write this sort of buddy cop story? That is all. I hope you like the art. If you use it, I'll die from joy. You use it, we'll die from joy. Be well, Rick.
Could you give me that the last part of the question again?
I
was looking at the logo and zoned out for a second. I'm not gonna lie, it's so cool. Especially like the black and red one. That's definitely my favorite.
But yeah, I agree.
Just lay that last bit.
What advice can you give as I continue to write this sort of buddy cop story? So what advice do you have for like a buddy cop? For like the pair that's sort of an odd couple, kind of friction but friendly? That's my bad.
I just wrote something very similar to that,
yes,
actually.
You did.
The last screenplay I did. Although, for me, the way I did it was I wanted to make sure I gave... Because I think you can kind of approach it two different ways. I think on the one hand, you got Lethal Weapon, where they're almost like a married couple.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you've also got something like, you know, Batman versus Superman, where they're kind of like co-equal leads. And I think that dynamic will either define whether you need to have a lot of scenes of them together and they're consistently bouncing off of each other. Probably similar to the dynamic as Farida and Havilar, which I will of course let you speak about, or how important it is that they kind of have individual opportunities to steal the spotlight and be badasses.
Yeah.
For me, mine was almost like a DNA helix of them coming together and breaking up again, where it was kind of like, all right, we're going to attack the boat. We will attack the boat from different sides. So we're together. We plan it. Attack from different sides. So there were scenes where both of them got to do their thing. Then they come together again and kind of like deal with the big bad. So it was still kind of cohesive. But I think that's kind of the most important thing. If you're after a Riggs and Murtaugh, I'm too old for this shit, when he's crazy kind of thing, or are you trying to have each of them be like fully fleshed out, you know, completely? I mean, of course the character should be fleshed out, of course, but I mean, yeah, completely standalone, but yeah, working together.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the things that pop in my head are, when you have two characters and you're sort of going to push them together, they, like B-Dave's saying, you need them both to have badass moments. Like, if they're both solving the plot and only one of them has actually got the answers, this is a sidekick. Yeah. And it's not, that I would not call a buddy cop. They both need to have purpose and value. And without both of them there, the each is weaker, right? Yeah. To some extent, right? And whether yeah, that's like, you know, we are kind of supporting each other and creating a whole because both of us are messed up in our own ways, or if it's like we are both badasses in slightly different ways who are kind of attacking the problem from different angles, you know, there's a whole spectrum there. I think that's yeah, a big part. And I think that's another thing, is that when, and it sounds like you've already kind of got it going where you have two very different people with very different perspectives, that helps too, because you don't want to give me two characters who are essentially the same and agree on everything, yeah, because at that point, why are there two of them?
Yeah.
You know, there has to be some kind of friction there to create a little bit of tension, you know, and maybe you decide to make it that, you know, working together, the friction of working together causes them to come apart and then realize they're stronger together. Or maybe they have friction in the beginning and they figure that out, or whatever it is. But that idea that when you're going to pull two characters together, you know, we've talked about when you're telling a story, you're answering a couple, you have to answer a couple of questions. Why these characters? Why yeah, right now? And why is it going to take a whole book? Right. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, once you say these two characters to come together, the coming together has to be part of the why the characters. Why yeah, these characters together?
Yeah.
And so that those are kind of the important bits. I got another little thing, which yeah, is, maybe you don't need to hear this, Rick, but I find this pair can be really this kind of thing where you have like this unlikely pair, you know, like the old adventuring buddies or the mentor mentee, like it can be really fun and it can create a lot of banter, and I'm down for it. But remember, like, comic relief has to relieve tension. Don't just do it willy nilly.
Because
mm-hmm, yep, I, as unless an editor, you're
writing a comedy.
Yeah, this is fair. As an editor, this is a thing I had to give notes on a lot, where it's like, you've got this, you know, this idea where you have this, you know, this adventuring pair who's like back for one more job, or like, you know, the one thing they have to do or whatever it is. And they just like back and forth joke all the time. So that's very tempting when you have those like personalities, especially because they really work in a comedy, but like, just kind of watch it match the tone you're going for.
Yeah. I remember this. I don't remember what year it was. I just remember being a teenager, and there was one summer where like TBS was like, oh, we got both Rush Hour movies and we're gonna play them all the time. And TNT was like, oh, bet, we're gonna get all of the Lethal Weapon movies and play them all the time. And I fell in love with buddy cop movies that summer and just watched these films on repeat. And I genuinely love them. So like, literally my first advice is going to be watch buddy cop stories. Like, yeah, like movies is one of the best examples of it. There's a bunch of good books for it as well, but take in that format and what makes them work. One of the ones that I'm actually going to highlight though, is Hot Fuzz.
Love that movie.
Yeah.
Mm. Which I have seen that movie.
The first time I saw it in theaters, I didn't like it.
Oh,
and
really?
I was like, oh, I just didn't like that movie. And then I watched it when it released on DVD, and I was like, oh no, I love this movie. I appreciate what it's doing now, because yeah, like the things you were talking about with the two types of people, the thing that I love about it is that I cannot think of anyone's name in that movie right now. But
they have names.
Yep. I just call them all the actors.
I know none of those names are coming to my head right now. But anywho, one of the cops is the very stern one and very
Nicholas
focused.
Nicholas Angel.
Yes. I remember Nicholas Angel.
Sorry.
And then
it's so rare that you get to be like super pumped about the movie thing.
I've seen the movie. I remember the movie.
It's so good.
I maybe remember the movie better than either of them. It's very exciting.
You know what? Plot twist. I have never actually seen Hot Fuzz. So there you go. So, you got one on me completely.
Freaky Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the reasons I will definitely recommend it is that it does kind of break down the action movie buddy cop formula. Mm-hmm. And like that's the joke about the movie, because I remember the actor's name, Nick Frost. I think his name is Nick Frost. His character looks like he's gonna be just a sidekick, but all of the emotional story part of it is in his character, and then he ends up becoming a badass. And you get character development in it, and his character development is helping the other cops' character development. It is such a well strung together story for those that I do think it actually really shows off the completely different characters having to work together for this sort of thing. The other movie I'm going to recommend, and this is really weird, Venom. Go with me on this. The first Venom movie.
That's more the married couple, but yes.
Well, now here's the thing. The first movie is a buddy cop film. The second movie is a bromance. That is those two movies. I love them. I know people don't. I absolutely do.
10 out of 10, no notes.
But again, it's looking at that character thing of like, this character wants this, this character wants this, but both of them are being driven towards this finale and they have to work together for it. And I love that sort of stuff. And the best thing I can say with when you're going to write something like this, especially if you haven't done it before, is to just engross yourself in those types of stories and look at what you like about those. And also what other people do, because that is a thing that you're going to need to know for, readers out there.
I'm trying to think of book buddy cops.
It's driving me nuts because I know I've read them and I can't think of them.
I was going to say one other thing, though, is I think there's a lot of ways that dynamic can manifest, too, that, you know, you've got your Kirk and your Spock also. I think it's just to what Aaron's point was saying, it can't be just one person who kind of has it all figured out and the other one is along for the ride, because that is in fact just a sidekick. But you know, as long as everybody has a chance to like be the rock star book. I mean, the first thing that came to mind for a book was Jonathan Strange and M. Norrell, but they are not.
That's like a buddy cop thing
if they never eventually got along.
Right. You know, if they never figure it out, then you get Jonathan Strange and M. Norrell.
So I just popped that in to look, and my...
Did you get the same list I did?
I don't know. Is it... Because I do have a question. So one of the thing that popped in my head was The Lies of Locke Lamora, which is Buddy Thieves.
Yeah.
But Gene and Locke are that sort of fit. And that is a case where it's like they know each other, they work together really well. It isn't sort of the friction in the beginning till we figure it out. But it has a bunch of things on here I'm confused by.
It has Gone Girl, A Study in Scarlet.
I'll give you A Study in Scarlet, because that's Sherlock Holmes and Watson. Yeah. Right? Although Watson's still a little bit in the sidekick. I actually don't remember. There are definitely places where Watson is way more functional than we definitely absorb from
that. Not in A Study in Scarlet.
But that's what I was thinking. Like, I don't know about that one. That one's sort of weird. And Red Dragon? Is there a buddy cop in that?
Hannibal and Will Graham work together to take him down.
Oh, I don't know if I'd call that a buddy cop, though.
That's a reach.
And similarly, Into the Woods In the Woods is in here, which has like a cop and his partner, and their relationship gets completely destroyed while solving this case. And it is not, I would not put it in the category of buddy cop.
Yeah.
It's like two cops working together. and this horrible crime, and one of them is having a nervous breakdown.
Yeah, I mean, seven is two cops working together to solve a crime.
Yeah,
buddy cop.
As a buddy cop.
Oh my
movie.
God, that is a nightmare.
Yeah, that's just me though.
I feel like this is a very very good point, right? Because you could have like sort of you could tick certain boxes, but the vibe is off. It's not that genre.
Yeah.
Something has happened. Trevor is.
They put House of Leaves on here. What? Sorry.
This is
we're
AI.
Getting off topic.
AI is not allowed to do anything.
This feels like an AI list. I'm not going to lie. Like,
we just kind of we saw the word cop. We saw the word buddy. Here you go. Yeah. Like, there's that's not how that works.
There's two people in this.
There's two people in this.
All right, are we ready for another one? Or we have any other buddy cop thoughts?
I just want to say to I think it was Rick. Definitely look into like buddy cop books. We're coming up with them right now, but also you know movies are good too. You get the story elements.
Mm-hmm.
All right, number two. Here we go. Hello, I am a narrowly professional author, first and foremost a writer, and I recently found this podcast. I've been binging an episode or two every 42-minute drive to and from work. I'm obsessed. However, in my current manuscript, I'm implementing a real-life outline to it and rewriting the entire thing from an entirely different POV, and foreshadowing is popping up organically through the characters' offhand comments and some actions. My problem is, while this foreshadowing is extremely impressive, some of it is not even conscious or planned. Most of these moments are even jumping points for future plot points I haven't thought of yet. So, from the minds of two authors and a writer, what are y'all's thoughts on the process of foreshadowing? Important? Planned? Happy accidents? Thanks! K.E. Steinhauer, future bestseller, probably.
First of all,
to print that email and frame it. for me, I find so y'all know that I'm a fiend for planning, outlining, and all that stuff. But when I'm writing the story, I find most foreshadowing is incidental or in the moment. Unless there's something that I know is going to be really, really important, like Chekhov's gun style.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's like, I need to establish he's allergic to shrimp, you know?
Yeah.
Like, need somebody to say that. But besides that, I don't particularly work too hard to plan foreshadowed moments unless they're just absolutely pivotal and clutch.
I'm in the exact same boat. Like I will have some in the outline of like, these are plot heavy foreshadowing. These are the ones that I'm definitely going, see.
Yeah. That'd be a real shame if something were to happen to this guy, wouldn't it? Yeah.
But when it comes to like stuff in dialogue and whatnot, that is usually just as I'm writing it, I'm like, oh, here's a nice little spot for that. I'll throw that in.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like for me, for the most part, these are things like you're saying, you're figuring out as you're writing and it pops in your head. And even more than that, once I'm gone back and I'm revising, I know where it's going. And so it's a little easier to sort of seed those bits in. One of my favorite, very silly ones, my very first book, The Godcatcher, the main character in the very beginning is having like lunch with her fine aunt and uncle in her shitty apartment. And there's this little line about her aunt trying to get her to go to a party and meet like a nice boy so she'll move back home. And instead of trying to go to wizard school, which she has been kicked out of. And she
Boomst
thinks about
us, right?
Right. It's like, girl, you rolled all the wrong stats for this class. Go find something else. But anyway, so she thinks about the last time and how she got stuck talking to this guy who was like a, you know, a member of the guard, he'd signed up for the Waterdeep town, guard, I forget, city guard, and had been made to patrol the sewers. And he was just telling her in detail, like all of his extremely boring sewer patrol stories. And then later in this, she has to go down into the sewers to find the bad guy. And she's like, oh, my God, I wish I'd listened to that stupid story. But just for like a second, it's this little tiny callback that I seeded in. And what I find, I like doing that. It's definitely like, I feel like people mostly only pick it up on a subconscious level.
Yeah.
But I write books people like to reread. I find, and people like to tell me all the cool things they notice the second time around. Mm-hmm. And that's when it's fun, right? When you see all those little hints and then someone goes back and rereads it and goes, to be fair, I mostly do that for me. There's a lot of things I'm realizing about my writing process that are about entertaining myself while I'm doing it.
Oh, hell yeah.
First and foremost. The first thing is like, you're doing this, you better like it. So do what you need. But that's the other bit, right? You can hint at things, you can get people in the right kind of mindset so that they buy in when the thing happens.
Yeah.
And then the other bit is sometimes I will accidentally foreshadow. In Brimstone Angels, I did this a lot. There's like, for example, this is like slightly spoilery, but guys, it's been out forever. So plug your ears if you haven't read it. There's this guy that I mentioned offhand in the very first book, Garago, who's this wizard in this village where they live. And then he comes up periodically. Garago. This is the guy who first taught Farida like a little bit of magic, and he was crazy and he would get drunk and he would just like cast spells in the wall. The Mahed would have to go fix the wall. So he's like this weirdo in their village. And so as I'm writing The Devil You Know, I realize like, okay, there is a little hero's journey here. We have to sort of descend into the underworld and meet the, you know, the guardian. And I'm like, who's the guardian in Arashvayam? If she has to go back home to this place where she's as good as dead, like this is symbolic. Okay, well, it's probably that guy. Who's that? Oh my God, there's someone they're looking for. And what if that guy is the guy and he's been there the whole time? And it's like, this is why I keep mentioning this random character. Why she keeps having conversations about, yeah, I knew a wizard once. Because actually, he's super important. I look so fucking smart. And I'm going to tell you guys, I didn't know that at all until the last book.
I love it.
And there's lots of bits like that where I'm like, oh shit, for real, that all fits together. That's the big, beautiful one. But
you're like, behold my genius.
Right? Like, it's a very satisfying thing. And I feel like sort of like if your heart pulls you towards something and you're just like, sure, here we go. It's not thrown off the story. It might be one of those things that like it's a piece, it's a hook for later.
Yeah.
But intentionally setting hooks for future books, I would say just be a little cautious with that because there's always a possibility there aren't future books or that you're going to get there and be like, I don't want to write another one. And then you have this little weird dangly bit.
Bits. Before his untimely passing, that was George R. R. Martin's undoing, you know? Mm. He didn't know what the hell he was trying to set up in 1996, and now he can't get there in a fulfilling way. I will say one other thing that I've done on occasion is I did the thing. I told the story as intended, but when you get to the end, like maybe you set upon in the over the course of writing, you set upon the fact, oh shit, he's allergic to shrimp, and that's the murder weapon. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm here, I have not said that at any point. Over the story. Maybe you got to go back and sprinkle it in, you know, or go back and sort of put an electric arrow pointing towards the shrimp platter that he very much is like,
because we keep talking about shrimp. Yeah. All I can think about is Pierce Brosnan being allergic to shrimp and Mrs. Doubtfire. Yep. That's like, I can't. And I'm like, they didn't set that up. He just says it at the restaurant.
But that's enough. He says it at the restaurant.
He says it at the restaurant. Yeah,
That's enough.
Yeah.
I do love, like, so much of this is, it kind of goes back to that kind of guiding your reader's attention and what you're pointing them at or pointing them away from or, like, leading them to make conclusions about. That's my favorite part. Mm-hmm. Manipulating people.
Where you're like, for fun.
You know. So they're happy about it.
Exactly. You know, they've consented.
Yeah.
Consensual manipulation. That is a good way to describe fiction.
It's a very good way to describe fiction.
All right, ready for another one, or we have more thoughts?
Oh yeah, Trevor hasn't really gotten a chance to say.
Well, no,
I
essentially just like agreeing with you that it's like the ones that are set into the outline. Those are the ones that I'm like, haha. Those are the ones that I know are they're the ones I want them to be able to see, because, and I do think that's something, and I can't remember if we talked about foreshadowing on the show before. Who knows? It's been so long. But
what haven't we talked about at this point?
I do think some people think that with foreshadowing, it's like, oh, I have to hide it. I have to bury it under all this stuff. It's like, no, make it as obvious as possible, because
hit them in the face.
Make it
impossible to miss. Yes.
Yeah. Because you need, like Aaron was saying, the subconscious to recognize that one. Like, you're reading a book, you're reading hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of words one after the other. Stuff gets lost while you're reading that you're not having at the front of your head. So you do need those things to be up there in front, basically the ones with the neon sign pointing at it and being like, hello, yes, this is the foreshadowing.
I do feel like I want to put a tiny asterisk on that, because like, if you foreshadow very clearly and then the whole book is going, what's gonna happen? Reader,
it's for sure.
it drives me. There's the one that always comes to mind is Bill Willingham, who did the Fables comics, wrote a book called Peter and Max, maybe. And in the beginning, like, it's like the Pied Piper kind of thing, and they have this flute called Frost, and the mouthpiece is sharp, so the people who play Frost get their scars in the corners of their mouth, and one brother gets it, but then the other brother is so jealous that he like kills the father and takes it. I'm like, someone's getting stabbed with that flute. Like, immediately. And then the whole book, it's just like, what do we do? I'm like, when's someone getting stabbed with the flute? And then at the end, he's like, oh, and then he just like stabs him with the flute, and he's so surprised. I'm like, dude, that's what that flute's for.
I vividly remember being in the theater watching Avatar, the original one that was like over a decade now ago, and we just got the sequel. I remember sitting there with my wife. I'm watching Jake Sully, talking to the general dude. General dude's all angry, and he gets situated into his mech, and he's moving arms in very like, look at this thing kind of way. And I just leaned over to her and I went, the climax of the fight is he's going to be in an avatar. He's going to be in that. He's going to break that knife off and shove it through the glass. And an hour and a half later, that is exactly what happened.
This could be okay
if the whole story becomes like, what's going to happen? How are we going to do the thing? And then the thing happens and it's exactly what you do in the first 15 minutes. Like, that's really annoying. And it can be still like, okay, well, that was too much foreshadowing.
But. Yeah, because it comes down to like getting someone to like, I just want someone to notice like, oh, I think I need to remember that. That's all I want. The game Resident Evil 8. It opens up with this like fairy tale storytelling thing where you're like, this isn't Resident Evil. And it's supposed to be like, ooh, what is this? It literally just, it's like, no, this is telling me the entire plot of the game. Is it? Okay. Yes. No, just 100. It's not foreshadowing. It was just a really pretty, here's what's coming up.
the worst example I've seen of this lately was, the second Suicide Squad movie with Harley and the golden gun. You know what I mean?
I think you were telling us about this.
It may as well have had Chekhov written on the handle.
Literally. And I mean, I guess that was the herpaderp gag from James Gunn, but I'm like, but again, it was too much. There's no romance, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Okay, now I'm ready for a new question.
All right, here we go. Oh, mighty masters of Pangentia. I like that one. Love the show. Love you all. I'm trying to write a sci-fi novel about evil corporations. I've got a rough outline of how the story will go, what the characters want and fear, etc. I think my question is about research. I have some characters dealing with trauma and depression, and I don't want to do a shitty job handling that. But I don't know anyone who's willing to talk about those things. And anyway, if I met someone with trauma, the last thing they'd want to do is tell me how to write about their problems in a book no one will ever read. I also want to know more about how big corporations work. I've only worked in family businesses, how power works inside them, where the weaknesses tend to be, etc. I tried getting some books about those topics from the library, and I just couldn't make sense of them. I never went to college. I got really frustrated with myself, but it was like these books aren't written for me. I tried listening to some podcasts, but I kept zoning out because they rarely came close to answering my questions. A buddy of mine suggested I offer to buy college professors coffee and ask them questions, a neat idea which I felt much more comfortable with. But none of the professors I contacted returned my calls, and the only one who replied to my emails basically said, yeah, I don't think I can help you, bud. So what other avenues are open to someone like me to research this sort of stuff? Are there forums where you can post questions and get answers from experts?
I mean, that is called Reddit.
I'm not going to lie, Reddit's very good for this.
Specifically, I knew there was one that existed, and I just found it. It is it's all one word, but it's writer research, but it's sharing the R. So write research. And that is, it's specific things for you to be able to post questions there to either get other writers information about it or people who are experienced with it. So that's the first one.
Yeah. This is a thing about research is you're going to have to chase down a lot of different paths to find the right one. You know, I have asked experts for things and a lot of them don't know what to do when you ask them for, they're like, oh, I don't, what? Well, and so, you know, take it on the chin. I do think more people want to talk than you think they do.
Yes.
Yep.
I had a I had a buddy that used to hang out at the cafe my friends and I used to go to, and he was a former cop, and he got approached one time by a writer that wanted to talk to him about, you know, cop stuff, and he was more than happy to do it. Like they took him out to coffee and stuff. The guy offered to pay him for his time. He's like, I don't freaking care. I like talking, but that's one of the things though with that is that like. Do offer to pay for people's time if you are going to be taking up time and they don't know you. That is one of the biggest things that I say when it comes to researching from someone specifically, is at the very least offer it. Like, it, you know, if they turn you down, okay, but at least put that one out there because, you know, it does look weird.
go ahead.
I was just going to say also, if it's sci-fi, especially if it's future sci-fi, it's all right if it's not just 100%.
That's,
you know,
well, what, yeah. I will say that I will agree with that on the corporate side of things. When it comes to the depression side of it, that is definitely like I think we talked about this on an episode a little while ago. It's like, you really got to be careful with stuff like this and you need to do your due diligence.
I will say though, the solution there even is don't say, oh, I'm depressed. I've got this. Yeah. I've got that. You know what I mean? You just have them express their emotions and go through what they go through or whatever.
Yeah.
But you know, don't try and sell it as something that it isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, don't try and sell yourself as something that you are not.
Yeah. I would also say if you're going to look into reading sources, right? There are lots of sort of reading levels for these sorts of things. Like specifically, if you're going to if you're trying to read up on trauma and depression, there are a lot of self-help books out there. There are self-help books. Like I know there's one called Talking to Depression, which is about like, hey, if your partner is depressed, here's what they're going through. So especially if it's like you don't know what this is like because fortunately you've never had to deal with it, that might be a good place to start. But this is the thing. And then, you know, when you get into books like you want to learn about something and what you got access to is like scientific papers kind of thing, really just understand going in. And this doesn't matter if you've gone to college or not, because I'll tell you, when you go to college and you get hit with these things, they're not easier. You're like, oh my God, this is going to break my brain to get through this the first few times, right? Eventually you get fluency with that kind of writing, but it is not what you get, what you use anywhere else. So you sit down and you go through and you make, if you can get it printed out and make notes on it and be like, I don't know what this fucking word is, right? I'm going to go look it up, right? I don't understand this concept. I'm going to ask someone, what is this? Mm-hmm. And build that knowledge up, because it that's exactly what you're doing, right? You're coming in on a topic that you admittedly don't know anything about, and you're going to have to be dumb about it first. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what it is. And even when you are like fairly into, like, I will tell you right now, I have this book I want to read, which is like called Baba Yaga, the Ambiguous Mother and Witch of Russian Folklore. And it's like some guy's like thesis, basically.
Oh, wow.
I'm very hyped to read this book. Yeah. But every time I open it, I'm like, okay, I got to like sit with this and get into it, because I love folklore. I love history. I read about it all the time, but I don't sit down and read scholarly works about it. And I've lost my skill at just jumping in on that stuff. So it is going to be a big ask. And so anytime you have to make that big switch, it's taxing on your brain. But if you want it and you need to like get this knowledge, that's genuinely my suggestion, is make space somewhere comfy and like do the things you need. But before we get there, you're going to find a lot of easier to read stuff by looking more in sort of the commercial
yeah,
nonfiction area.
I'm going to grab this by the other handle, especially if this isn't your background. Because, yeah, I think we all agree that, yes, you need to be sensitive to your portrayal of these things. And quite frankly, I reiterate, I would avoid using words that you don't necessarily aren't necessarily qualified to use about these things. But I would say consume popular media that portrays characters in the way that you want to portray your characters.
Yeah.
Read books that hit the notes that you're trying to hit. Watch movies that hit the notes you're trying to hit, and just see how they did it.
Yeah.
Because one, I think you can chew up a lot of life trying to become an expert on things that, you know, other people literally spend years studying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it still may not make a better reading experience at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to give a different example, the role-playing game Shadowrun, if anybody's familiar with it.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Shadowrun is so damn intricate that it's like you almost have to know how to do those things in life to understand how it works in Shadowrun.
100%.
Yeah, like you have to be able to actually know hacking in life to know hacking in Shadowrun. And it's like, past a certain point, it's like, oh okay, you know, is that what we're here for?
It's like,
you know?
I could get all these d6s together and figure out which ones I need to roll, but or I could just go learn HTML.
Right, exactly. And yeah, guess which one's easier, you know what I mean?
I do totally agree with the media thing of it, especially of like doing some searches for like what movies do people with depression say properly represent depression? What movies do, you know, people who are in the corporate life say properly reflect corporate life? I mean, like, I worked at a restaurant for 10 years, and if you asked me what movie properly says what working in a restaurant is like, I would just say waiting. Like, that is just, it is obviously over-dramatized, but it's pretty close.
I think especially for like depression and trauma, you're going to find a lot of autobiographies in a lot of different sort of tones and styles.
Yes.
Yep.
That will kind of unpack it very, very well for you, especially and get very down fine into it. Right. Like, I like Jenny Lawson's Broken in the Very Best Way. That is not a story like Jeanette McCurdy's I'm Glad My Mom's Dead.
Yeah.
Right. Mm. Her parent, Jenny Lawson's parents, seem fine but weird.
Yeah.
But she still has, you know, multiple mood disorders, and she's very funny about it. Whereas Jeanette McCurdy's like, here's some shit that happened. Right.
Yeah.
And so you can certainly find lots of people telling their stories, and it might be there's, you know, ones that are more serious and ones that are funnier and ones that are more like, you know, matter of fact, and ones that are sort of a little more creative nonfiction style. Mm-hmm. You can find people writing books that are sort of fictionalized versions. There's lots of ways to consume this and empathize and put yourself in that position to kind of help see if you can write this character and how you might go about it.
Again, just be so very careful about trauma and experiences that aren't yours. The closest thing I've had to this was I wrote a story about some soldiers that were battling PTSD. And what I did was, even though I portrayed them all through the movie as sort of having it, any time I had to actually speak about how they felt, I went and researched real quotes from real people.
Mm-hmm.
That were like, I feel like this, you know, and I changed it a little so it wouldn't just be plagiarism and, you know, completely stealing somebody else's story. But I was like, but that's a valid expression of what this is like from somebody who's going through it when I'm not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, too, like, if you're doing that, you're also seeing like this manifests in many different ways, which gives you kind of a better sense. And you're not just grabbing like the tropes. You know, like, oh, they're depressed, so they never get out of bed.
Exactly. And like, they eat a lot of ice cream. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. The tropes is definitely the, like, look up what depression tropes are and try to avoid those.
Do not that. There you go.
Do not that. Yeah. Don't make Cameron and Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Okay.
Oh, Cameron.
So I wanted to note this here at the towards the end of the episode. I actually kept looking through the buddy cop books because I was curious about them. I'm just like, I know that I've heard of these existing, and I found one that I actually bought on my Kindle while we were talking. It's called The Fifth Ward First Watch. It is literally,
that sounds familiar.
It is two guards in a fantasy city that have to do that are end up in a buddy cop story, and I'm like, that sounds delightful. I'm in. Like, let's go.
I love a genre mashup.
Yeah,
that does sound pretty good.
Yeah. But yeah. So yeah. I think this is where we're gonna wrap this one up. We're doing a little bit of a shorter episode. Pulling the curtain back a little bit because we're recording more than one in one night. So you'll hear the rest of tonight later.
Wait. Let's do the worst possible thing. What? Read the next question, but we're not going to answer
No!
It's not a cliffhanger. You know what I am.
We'll answer
you know what I am. You know what I am. You know my brain.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Okay, I'm siding with B-Dave. Hello to my favorite podcast hosts. I am a fairly baby author. I self-published my debut novella in November 2022, publishing Twinsies. And I have a serialized story on my Substack, both fantasy and both are first in their own series. My question is, how do I improve my self-promotion so people will read/buy my work? I'm great at shouting out my friends, but when it comes to promoting myself, I curl into a ball of insecurity and imposter syndrome. It hasn't stopped me from writing because I need to write like I need to breathe, but it does get frustrating when I look at my lack of sales and read numbers. Any tips would be appreciated. Thanks so much, Carrie.
Oh, I know a thing or two about promotion.
Oh, but
yeah.
See, you said we can't answer it. No, so you'll have to wait till next week.
Oh, that's so terrible. Because I'm going to start talking in about 30 seconds.
I love how it turned around and it bit ya.
I mean, I don't have to wait.
You don't have to wait. Than 30 seconds.
This is so mean. I'm sorry.
But now you know we're going to answer your question. Isn't that exciting?
That's true. There you go. True. Next week.
That's true. Okay. Well, then on that cliffhanger, friends, where can people find you? What are some things you're working on?
You can find me on Blue Sky at Aaron M. Evans. You can join me on twitch.tv/dungeonscrawlers on Mondays at 1:30 p.m. Pacific for Concentration Check, co-writing space. Come do some Pomodoro sprints with me. You can also join me on that same channel. It's 6:30 p.m. Pacific on Wednesdays for Fearful Symmetry, a game I am DMing where everybody's been sucked into a dimension full of their greatest lies. It's great. They're getting very upset.
I'm totally not worried at all.
It's fine. Also, pre-order my new book, Relics of Ruin, comes out next April. It is a spooky skeleton mystery with lots of found family drama.
Bones. Wooden bones. B.D. Walters, I say words about things. You can find me sustaining myself from the power of your tears. Still a bunch of stuff that I can't talk about yet that is coming up. But I will say, still got a promotion going on for 14 Day Writer. It is pinned at the top of my Twitter, which is @BDaveWalters, @BDaveWalters everywhere. Get it for 50% off because the strike is kicking my behind. So every little bit helps.
Do it. Here, I'll give you a plug. That Marvel Multiverse RPG is officially out, so you can go learn those rules so you can run B-Dave's adventure later in the year.
There it is. That is true.
Nice, nice. Yeah,
I only know that because I bought it the day it came out.
I got paid by Disney as an achievement unlocked.
Yeah.
Hey.
You can follow me on far too many social media platforms at the Trevor. There is an A hiding in there. And you can also find me on Fearful Symmetry on Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. Pacific on twitch.tv/dungeonscrawlers. I almost said CNE games. Oh, yeah. And I guess you can read my writing in Idle Champions right now. I got to write Lazelle from Baldur's Gate 3 because she's in Idle Champions now. And that was real cool.
Also, y'all, there's not really a way that I can explain this in a way that it will make sense completely out of context, but Trevor is going to get to tell a story about characters that Aaron and I created and are known for, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Ooh, yes, that is a spoiler for later on, so nope. Stay tuned. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's gonna do it for this week's episode. Thank you all so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, and the best way to support it is by leaving a review on your podcast service of choice and telling your friends about the show. I saw some people in these emails saying that they found out about this show because it was recommended to them. Shout out to all of you people for doing that. You are amazing individuals, and we love you. The real heroes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And if you would like to write in with your own questions, like the ones that we read here tonight, and we are going to be doing more, so we might catch up. So write those in and send them into writingaboutdragonsandshit@gmail.com. If you'd like to keep up to date on the show, you can follow us on Blue Sky @AboutDragons. But until next week, write about some dragons and shit.